Hey, landlords, are you ready to level up your rental game and simplify your life? Well, get ready to meet your new best friend, KeyCheck. KeyCheck is your all-in-one solution for stress-free property management with tenant-paid screenings, rent payment processing, online lease creation with eSign, and a suite of incredible landlord tools. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. No more chasing down checks or sifting through piles of applications. KeyCheck helps you organize and manage all things landlording in a simple and efficient way. So if you're tired of the rental chaos and crave seamless, efficient management, head over to keycheck.com and sign up today. Make landlord life a breeze with KeyCheck, the game changer for modern property owners.
Welcome to Landlord Diaries, where we talk about midterm rentals and the opportunities behind them. We'll share landlord stories, talk about maximizing investment potential, and discuss how to live the very best landlord life. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Furnished Finder, the place for everything midterm rentals. Remember to like and subscribe if you enjoy our content.
And we're back. It's your Furnished Finder host team, Kelly Bailey, in the Austin, Texas area, midterm enthusiast with properties exclusively on Furnished Finder at this point.
I'm going to get you a t-shirt exclusively on Furnished Finder.
That's a good one.
So I love it.
I want it in the right size.
Perfect. That I can do. I can accommodate that. Well, today we get to talk to Arby, who is an educator, an investor, and she's very, very creative. So she started by taking single family homes in New York, which we all know is a crazy challenging market, and switching them into multifamily. So instantly increasing the value, and she has mastered her way of doing that. She started at the age of 23, and now she finds all sorts of ways to give back to the community, to help other people get into investing. And it was really great to hear her perspective, especially from such a daunting market. So I know everybody will find some great information in this episode, and we're excited for you to hear it. Please don't forget that all of our podcast episodes are powered by Furnished Finder. You can find us at furnishedfinder.com. You can list your property for just $99 a year and get unlimited tenant leads and unlimited bookings because you book direct. So we stay out of the way. Enjoy, guys.
Hi guys, thanks for joining us today again. If you're new to our show, please enjoy this episode, and if you love it, then subscribe. But we have a really fun guest today from New York. Her name is RB the Realtor. She is an investor and property manager in New York. RB pursued her first multifamily real estate investment at 23 years old and had a hard time locking one in, so she got creative and purchased a single family instead and then converted it into a multifamily. She has a variety of multifamilies in Queens, Long Island, upstate New York, and the Bronx. RB has a heart for the inner city communities of New York and loves coaching others that real estate is possible for everyone. You can connect with her at rbtherealtor.com. Hey, how is everybody today?
Good.
Hey.
So happy to be here.
We are so thankful you came on the show and can't wait to share your story. So let's jump into the first question, which is, I think I've got a pretty good grasp on your portfolio. You've got two family and three family multiplex in Queens, two single families in Long Island, two single families in upstate New York, and two multifamilies in the Bronx. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so I think you split those between long-term and midterm and Airbnb. So why don't you give us a breakdown of how your management style flows with those three different property management options?
Well, let me just take it a few steps back. I am traditionally a long-term landlord, right? So I started out in 2003 which is a long time ago. I'm dating myself. And so when I did start out, it was nothing but long-term tenants. That was all I knew. That is how I began. And that's actually the arena that I learned to navigate through. In the last few years, the climate had changed just a touch. And also, I had some people that were really seeing a lot of successes with traveling medical professionals. This is actually before the pandemic. So I had a friend, a close friend, who was a realtor broker who owns multifamilies in the Queens area, not too far from JFK Airport, that had back-to-back traveling medical professionals and never really had too much of a gap in time. And the returns on that were way better than what the rent was for a traditional tenant. And then also, one of the advantages that she was so excited about is usually it's like a long-term relationship when you're with your tenant. So it's kind of like marriage, right? You guys have your ups, your downs, your ebbs, your flows, like highs and lows. And at the end of the day, you're just happy that somebody is maintaining your property and also somebody is paying the rent on time. But it's so different when you host traveling medical professionals because, one, they just want a quiet, safe space to be able to rest while they're off of work or to be able to just relax when they have some downtime. But for the most part, they're working a lot of hours because they came here specifically for that function. And the thing that she was highlighting is, oh, so you remember when you had that tenant and you weren't too excited about that situation that took place? Well, how would you like it if you only had that tenant for a few months and then you got to get somebody new? And so if you didn't like that situation, then you have an opportunity to start on a new page with somebody else. I'm like, that doesn't sound too bad. So to be honest, that is basically how I got introduced to it. So it wasn't as if I did it the whole time. I started a few years back. I did find Furnish Finders, and that was one of the platforms that she was using. Obviously, a lot of people also know about Airbnb, and we just set the parameters to make sense for our locale. But it's been working out well, so well that I actually was able to turn one unit once my long-term tenant left into a short-term rental for midterm stays. So, and I like it, honestly. It's good.
Okay, so we heard that you kind of made your own multifamily units. Tell us how you decided to do that and kind of what that process was like for you, because that's quite the creative entrepreneurship, if you will.
It's somewhat of an undertaking, yes.
It sounds like a very large undertaking.
Yes. So just to be honest, it wasn't like I just woke up one day and said, let me get a house and make it into a multifamily. That was not my story. I'm in a market which has properties that are at a higher price point. And so I was looking, 23 years old, super eager. The only person in my age group and in my circle of friends that were even interested remotely in investing in real estate, because most people, you know, post-college are just kind of working, figuring it out, living life. So I decided I wanted to do owner-occupy multifamily purchase, right? And so that was what I set out to do. I put in offers. Offers did not get accepted. I put in an offer. It did get accepted. And when it got accepted, I was super excited and put down my earnest money and everything like that. And then for some reason, when we were supposed to go to contract, we never received the contract. And so wow. I'm like, so now at 23, you know, everything is a major deal. Super emotional, super invested in the process. And so when we didn't, I'm calling my attorney. This is the first time I'm even having to deal with a real estate attorney. So that even within itself was a big deal. And they told me that there wasn't much that I could do, because even though they did accept the offer, until the contract is fully executed, I don't actually have the property. So at 23, of course, the sky was falling. And I thought that that was the worst thing in the world. But it turned out to be a great beginning to another strategy. So I started to look in that area, because a lot of those properties were formerly single families, but converted. So I was like, let me try and find a property that's like that, because I knew the area was zoned for two and three families. And most of the properties were colonial that were just converted. So I'm like, let me just try and look for something like that, or something that might be lived in and split up just for convenience. And so I was able to, in the same area, find a property that was a colonial style. It was a single family, and it had the same layout as the property that I wanted to purchase. And so I was like, I already know what they did. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I already know what they did. Yeah. Let me go ahead and try and just do this. So I didn't know what to do, so I had to do my research. It wasn't as much. This is way back when, before everyone was just Googling everything. So I had to go to the library. I did my research. I had to find out who the key team members that I would need, such as an architect, an electrician, a plumber, what that process looked like. I even made trips to the Department of Buildings so I could find out what exactly was involved with that process. So when I spoke to these people, I would sound knowledgeable, because I'm just a young girl, you know, and there's that dynamic too, being not only female, but under 25 and a female.
Right.
In male-dominated arena, you know, of real estate, and honestly also being a minority, which there weren't too many in my area that were doing that. So I got as educated as I possibly could, and had consultations. I actually, the way that I was able to find my my tradesmen is I looked through the different affiliations. You know how they have all of those groups or organizations? So the National Association of Architects, the National Association of this and that. And I literally just combed through each and every one of them. It took days and days and days, and looked at their credentials and looked at their skill set, looked at their locale. And then I had conversations on the phone and found out about price point, because it had to obviously fit into my budget, because I was working for the Department of Education. So it wasn't like I had a whole lot of money, but I had just a touch to be able to get started. And I found an amazing team full of people that not only had the experience of doing this type of process, but also were in the spirit of teaching. So not only were they doing it as a service because they were a hired contractor, they also were very keen on explaining every part of it so that I was able to learn from them. And it wound up being one of the greatest experiences I had. There were some hiccups, of course, because anytime you have to get approval from local municipalities, it's typically things that you have to figure out, revisit, reinspect, and all of those different things. But we worked through it, and I learned a lot during the process. And once I was able to do that one time and force appreciation in a property, and, you know, because remember, I'm purchasing single families. And now turn into multifamily, but I still have single family mortgages attached to it. It automatically gave me a lot of equity to be able to tap into for the next project. And then it was kind of like rinse and repeat. And then I saw people that were of my community, women, minorities, that were like, how did you do this? As if I was some sort of anomaly. And I'm like, I'm not. There's people that do this every day, all the time. I just tried to figure it out, and I probably did it the hard way because I'm pretty sure somebody else knew this process and I could have shadowed them, but I did figure it out nonetheless. So I wanted to make myself available to people to help them through this process so that they could do it too. So people that want to own a home, but they also need some sort of residual income to be able to offset their mortgage. And so that's how the whole realtor thing came into place, because you know, by trade, I'm an educator, I'm a psychologist, I'm a community person, so that's a big passion of mine. But the realtor piece came in just because now I have to be able to have some sort of certification or credential to help these people. I can't just go up to people and start talking to them,
right,
saying, hey, let me help them convert it. So that's how that whole thing came into play.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Furnished Finder, the ultimate platform for hassle-free midterm rentals. Whether you're a seasoned landlord or just getting started, Furnished Finder is the place for you. With Furnished Finder, you can say goodbye to booking fees and hello to direct bookings for 30-day plus days. It's a win-win for everyone involved. So if you're ready to experience the joys of midterm renting and take a load off your landlord's shoulders, head over to furnishedfinder.com today. We make it easy to get started. We're grateful to Furnished Finder for sponsoring this episode, and we're sure you'll love what they have in store for you.
And at 23, at what age did you decide you wanted to be a realtor?
24.
So you're saying you do things very slowly in life.
You know that.
You like to think about it for a few years.
You know, and
that's amazing.
I don't want to misrepresent. So I still had my full-time job, but I did want to help.
Sure.
So this was on the side because, as most people know, when you're in the Department of Education, you have – Your work hours are the school day hours, and then you have summers off typically. So I was able to do more in the summers, and I did more. And most people that are looking for properties or looking to do things do it after their work day, which most people's work day ends at 5 o'clock. So I end at 3. So I have a couple of hours to even prep or do things or to get places. So it was on top of the fact that I was helping people's children. The community.
Well, I think that's important to mention and important for everyone to remember, because I don't know if Kelly and I have talked to anyone who just got to do real estate full time straight out of the gate, right? You have to build your way within it and find a way to make it work. A lot of times, like you said, a full time job or something else, right? So I think that's really good that you mentioned that.
Thank you.
Well, I have my next question. I love that, you know, you're in, I'm sorry, but I always think of the Newsies. I don't know if people love watching the Newsies or not, but it's my favorite movie. I've been to the musical. They just did the play this summer in Austin. And so when I hear of the Bronx and Queens and Long Island, I always think of the Newsies, which is my favorite. But it's like you're in some really staple areas of the country. Yeah. And I love that you have a heart for helping those inner city communities. So why don't we jump into that part? Like, how are you involved in helping your inner city communities?
So pre-pandemic, and that's a great question. So I love that you asked that because it's honestly where my heart lies. Pre-pandemic, I was heavily immersed in community engagement, involvement, in understanding how they could create generational wealth through the acquisition of real estate. In the city that I have been born and raised, there are people that have been passed down apartments. So there's generations of renters because we have rent stabilized apartments. And with that being said, there are certain people that their grandmother gave their mother the apartment that they're paying $500 or $600 on, and then they gave it to their child that they wound up paying like $700 on, and now it gets to them and it's like $800, and they have a 2-bedroom apartment in the middle of Manhattan, where normally a 2-bedroom apartment would be thousands of dollars. So,
right,
it's pretty unique because a lot of people don't see the value in ownership because they have these programs that are meant to help, and it does help. But sometimes it creates a false sense of comfort in the situation, which basically stagnates growth. And so it winds up becoming a thing of, you have to educate people in the community on the benefits of home ownership, the benefits of being stakeholders within your community from an owner's perspective, the understanding, helping them to understand how to create a business, even if they are living in a home with that property, whether it's through midterm stays or whether it's through long-term tenants. This could be something that could help offset not only their expenses for the property, but their lifestyle. When I got my first property, I rented out every floor after I converted it, and I did not have any expenses for my property. So even though I was working for the Department of Education, my check was my own. I did not have to spend anything for living expenses. That within itself is a gem for a lot of people. And so I felt like part of my purpose is to help people. I have a helping spirit. So I wanted to help people that didn't even think that it was a possibility, or even didn't even think that there were advantages in ownership. And so when you lay out the tax advantages, when you lay out the income, the passive income that can come from it, when you lay out the fact that you are going to have more in your pocket if you do decide to only do it part-time or do owner-occupied real estate, it's something that is untapped for a lot of these inner city communities. So I connected with community-based organizations. I connected with banks and also people in the real estate field that are real estate professionals. And we began to have like this, like a power team, so to speak, like the Avengers. And we went into the community to save real estate for all. And that's how that happened pre-pandemic.
And you know what you said on your website, I believe, which I really like, is you have a heart for, and I didn't know the backstory of the generational rent. That is so, like, that is a cool feature that they offer. And it sounds like your way of helping understand that is generational wealth, is what you say on your website. It's like you want to help your clients set up generational wealth. And that is so cool. So in an area that is super trendy and has a lot of high-end investment properties, probably, how do you help navigate your clients through finding the right fit for them if they don't have a huge budget to work with?
It's location, location, location. So they might start out thinking that I want to go into a certain area, but maybe it doesn't fall within their budget or their price point. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. Then we have to look at where can you find property. So maybe it's not going to be in Tribeca. Maybe it's not going to be in downtown Brooklyn. Then maybe you might need to go somewhere in the Bronx, or maybe you might need to go somewhere in Queens, or maybe right outside of the boroughs in Westchester, such as like Mount Vernon, or either in Long Island on the Nassau County side. So what happens is right outside of the five boroughs, there are multifamilies available at lower price points. So when most people think, most people think of New York, they're thinking million-dollar properties, which there are a lot of those. But there are ways to find properties that are within the limits or right outside of the New York City five borough limits. And you can also be able to occupy those and get the rent and all of that good stuff.
I love how you use the creativity too, because I think one thing I heard someone say once is that there's always a number that makes a deal work. Mm-hmm. And there's always a deal to fit your numbers if you look hard enough. And sometimes looking hard enough, I think, reflects your sense of creativity, right? And maybe it's not just literally digging through listings and stuff, but getting creative and thinking, okay, how can I use this property? Or how could I transition this property? Or what could I do to make this property more valuable? So I think that's really important for listeners to remember, especially, I mean, I can't imagine a tougher market than New York. Quite honestly, because I mean, I don't know the first thing about that market, but you're right. All I think about is, oh my gosh, you're going to pay $1 million and you're going to get 5 square feet.
Right. And that
sounds like California.
Right. But like worse.
Very similar. And so one of the things that we do when we actually, and I say we because I'm a realtor, but I also have a real estate team that works under me. And it's the Golden Key real estate team. And so one of the things that we do is we try our best to not just help people to find properties or find homes that they can produce this income and do the short-term rentals or the long-term tenants, but we also educate them on how to produce a profitable property. That's one of the ways, and I had to get super creative, so I wrote down all of these different things over the years that worked. And, you know, space is at a premium in New York, parking is at a premium, and we show people how to get the most revenue generated out of their properties, and not just the inside of their properties, but the outside as well. My first property, on top of the tenants renting each floor, I also had people that had motorcycles renting my garage, and I rented that motorcycle. I also had people renting my driveway because I was always able to park in front of the house because we were in a residential neighborhood, but there are certain people that need to park their cars up for a little while. So I would rent each spot. It fit up to four cars. I would put three in there. So I had
so smart.
Yeah. Additional income coming in, and it wasn't even tied to like a tenant or a lease. It was outside of my house. So then one of the things that we coach people on, or that I coach people on, is how to generate the most income, how to produce a profitable property. And there's so many ways to do that, especially when you're in the ownership seat. And I think that is what makes my I guess, strategy a little bit different, because there are a lot of people that do short-term or midterm rentals, but they do it from an arbitrage perspective. Mm-hmm. My whole thing is purchase and leverage that purchase to get the most out of that particular property and then move on and continue from next property to next property to the next. And that is the way that I was able to go from 9 to 5 to firing my 9 to 5, because that system worked for me and other people as well.
I love that, RB. I feel like you're coaching me right now, because in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, she's talking to me right now, because we've got in Belton, our property has 1.5 acres, and the house is nice and further back. And so there's this highway front land. It's not like a big highway, but it's a highly trafficked road. I'm like, I've been thinking for about a year now, okay, how can I get more, passive income by using the front part of the land? Mm-hmm. And my first thought was just putting up, some sort of sign for lease that wouldn't look, having restrictions on it so that it wouldn't be an eyesore for the guests that are staying in the home. Yeah. But do you have any go-tos when you have open land on a busy road that is like, yes, that's your option. That's your best option.
If you have open land, it's a busy road, you're saying. So there's a lot of traffic.
Busy, yep.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I would think of is maybe providing an experience. So there are a lot of people that look for open land to do that glamping situation where they get to live outdoors, but they don't necessarily want to have like all of the, the experience of just like the woods. So
that's me.
Exactly. So maybe glamping, maybe allowing people that do have those mobile homes to have a park space on that to be able to rest. There's always somebody that needs space for something. So I would take inventory of different people's needs. Facebook Marketplace gives a lot of ways for you to be able to see what people are looking for in your locale and then meet that need. So in my mind, I thought about your locale. So I would say look in like maybe, usually they have like little communities on Facebook, other different platforms that people kind of exchange what they need, what they want and all that stuff, or what they have to offer. If you go into one of those groups, then you can put it out there. I have this amount of land. Would you guys be interested in using it? If so, how? Create the conversation, make a post, see the response.
I love that.
And then take it from there. So a lot of things are just putting it out there in the world that you have this commodity. you have something that people might want to use, and I'm pretty sure they're going to flock to you and say, oh, I would love it for this, or oh, I have such and such and I need to just have it stationed somewhere and I don't even want to move it. Because like a lot of the times, even when I started doing the driveway rental, those people did not even want to move those vehicles, but they just, maybe they were going out of town, or maybe they were going to be switching over registration and had to take the plates off, so they needed to park it somewhere. There's so many differences for like land or space. So I would probably say my best bet would be go into one of those groups for your locale and post out there that you have vacant land. Is anybody interested in using it?
That is such a great idea. And I get stuck in my own mindset a lot. So I love that you said just put it out there, because when we all work together, like our ideas only get better, not worse. So that's really good advice. Katie, you're up. What question do you have next?
So I have a question. It's very clear that you are very service-minded and you love helping others. It's also super clear that you come from an education background, just the way that you think and the way that you're sharing ideas. I'd love to hear more about how you work to educate other people who are interested in getting in the world of investing and how you structure that and kind of, you know, like you said, it's all about sharing those ideas and helping each other. And I know you have something.
So I do coaching. That is something that I did not because, I wasn't looking for this. So many people were asking me. So then the real estate coaching is something that I do. I teach people how to leverage their 9-to-5 and by investing in real estate. So eventually they can scale to a point that they can fire their 9-to-5 such as I did. I also, in partnership, because I do believe in giving back. When you get a certain amount of success, if you have a certain amount of knowledge, I feel like it's incumbent upon you to just be able to share it with people. So I have partnered with several banks, also with several different aspects of the government to be able to provide information for first-time investors and home buyers on how they can get into that space, as well as how they can access grants, down payment assistance, closing cost assistance, and all of that. Mm-hmm. And for people that might not even have great credit, how they can even get their credit repaired for free. So there are so many different resources. Wow. And I call myself like the real estate resource lady. I like to connect the dots for a lot of people. So I do it through my coaching. I do it through a string of masterclasses that I do have available, one of which is producing a profitable property. But then on the philanthropic side of things, I also collaborate with a lot of community-based organizations, banks, and also HUD, which is a part of the government. And we do virtual and in-person first-time home buyer and investor seminars. And actually, for even people that are looking, real estate professionals included, or either real estate investors or future real estate investors, even in the upcoming month, I have a seminar masterclass, which is not only myself, because I believe in the power of collaboration. It's myself on the panel, a bank, the president of the Harlem CDC, which they own the Apollo, an investor that also does wholesaling and does a lot of purchasing of property remotely, all the way out in Milwaukee, as well as in New York. I have a person that specializes in real estate acquisitions in New York and New Jersey. And of course, myself will be on a panel. And this is something that's actually for the community we're doing it in Harlem, because a lot of people in Harlem, those are those generational renters. And we want to show them, you too can be an investor. You too can be a homeowner. You too can build a business, and you can do it. And a lot of the times with help from all of these programs that give you a head start.
Love it. That's so great. That's so great.
Thank you.
Awesome. So I'm going to transition us to what's called, actually, before I transition us, reminder, if you want to know what upcoming sessions RB will be coaching on, then go to her website. RBTheRealtor.com. Do you want to give any other places they should look you up for your sessions?
Sure. So I also encourage people to go to my Instagram, which is NYS_realtor. NYS, like New York State, _realtor. I also encourage people to go to Facebook. I have a page. It is RB Real Estate Services. That is the page. We do have a real estate group free of charge to join. That is Real Estate for the People. Yeah, that's Real Estate for the People. That's on Facebook. And I'm on Clubhouse as well. RB the Realtor is my handle on all social media platforms.
My
gosh. Yeah.
Is Clubhouse still a thing? Is that like still a thing?
It is.
Yes. I honestly, like, I heard about it, like, I mean, when it was like coming out, and then I felt like it like dissolved. I'm glad to hear it's still a thing.
It is. We do. You know what it is? You're able to reach people both inside and outside of your locale. So it's really great to be able to share information nationwide and sometimes internationally. So we do a lunch and learn, and we do that.
Monday.
Yeah.
You're on a lunch and learn. Aren't you on a lunch and learn with Jesse from the Big Break Show and the guys from Live, Let, Thrive? I think Micah, are you, is that your lunch group?
It's a lunch and learn for short-term rentals that we do on Thursdays. Yes. And they are part of my group. Yeah. And that's on Clubhouse.
That's cool.
So yeah, that, and then they can also go to www.rb10k.com because that's my digital business card.
Love it.
And how does Clubhouse work? If you want to join a group, is it all live? Is it pre-recorded things?
It's live. So like we have a session today where we're bringing on an attorney to speak about when you co-buy with someone and if it goes wrong, what do you do? What are your legal options? And what can, so it's a lot of education and it's just my way of giving back. It doesn't take a lot of energy to have a conversation and to share that information with people. And if I can help somebody, we do it as a lunch and learn so we can give people bite-sized portions of information so they feel a little bit more empowered to get started or to thrive in that real estate space.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like also it's one of the best ways that you can retain information and learn even more is by teaching.
Yeah.
Right? So how wonderful that is. I love how you are always continuing to grow and learn and you're not stagnant in your position because Kelly and I talk about this all the time, how there's always room in real estate to get better. Like there is no top. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I think embracing that mindset and those habits is so great.
All right, let's transition to landlord logistics. On our intro call, one thing you wanted to share with other Furnished Finder landlords that are watching the show or considering getting into furnished rentals is how to navigate landlording. So I'm going to let you take away on that topic.
Okay, so how to navigate landlording. One, you need to have systems in place. Systems for communication. You need to have systems for tracking your profits and losses. You need to have a team. So I learned, like, I was learning how to fly a plane while in the plane, so to speak, when I started. I was living in a property. I was landlording at the same time, and I was learning it. So a lot of the things I did was word of mouth. One of the things that I did learn moving forward, documentation is so important. It is your best friend. Mm. In this process, making sure that, you know, clear communication is very important. Managing expectations is very important. So upfront, being able to communicate about what your expectations are in this relationship of landlord and tenant is important. And then also being able to hear what they would like to have as an experience as your tenant. That's important because if you have a meeting of the minds and mutual respect, it makes the process a lot easier. And I can say, knock on wood, that since 2003, I haven't had to evict anybody. I think that keeping a, right, that is, in New York, nonetheless. So, you know, keeping that open line of communication is important. So I typically advise people that are starting, one, have conversations, keep that door open. And then also, when you do have a conversation about something that is something that you want to enforce as a rule, regulation, or something that is within your lease, as soon as you have that conversation, let them know, hey, I just want to make sure that we have all this documented. And you can even put it on yourself, because sometimes I'm so busy that I might forget. I'm going to send you a written communication about what we just spoke about, just so that we can always have this, or a way that is a little bit less, I would say, you know, less discouraging for a tenant is when you have your invoice. I always have an area on my invoice for comments. And what I list is different maintenances that happened during that month, different communications that took place. If there is some sort of reason why they broke one of the rules of your lease, then I highlight that we had a discussion, the date, the time, and I also attach a copy of that section of the lease where it highlights exactly what it is that is expected for that tenant while they are taking residence in your property. So I would say communication, documentation, having a system, and making sure you have a good team. because things do come up. And one of the things that you need is you always need a handyman, a contractor, a plumber, electrician, not just one, maybe two or three, because if you rely on just one, have a backup to the backup, because if something happens that's emergent, you need to be able to address it right away. Because I find that a lot of the times tenants get upset if they feel like you're letting it linger too long. And then that's when you can come to issues about payment of rent or whatever the case is. And you don't want to have those conversations if you don't have to. So make sure you have a strong team, strong systems, possibly even a platform to help you manage that, such as Furnish Finders, or either, you know, other property management software that helps to make it easy. And also, please, no matter what you do, make sure you keep a good accounting of your profit and losses, because that is going to be something so important to have handy for your accountant once tax season rolls around.
Mm.
So those
love
are a few things.
That's all really good advice. I think my last question for this section is, with the loom of recession and you having a portfolio of properties all in different realms, long-term, short-term, and mid-term, what coaching advice would you give to other investors as we are potentially entering a recession, just to make sure and be ready for any changes that might come?
Get your pocketbooks ready, because there's about to be a storm of opportunity coming your way. You know, you don't want to profit off of anybody's downfall. However, in real life, you always, you might be the solution for somebody that finds themselves in a bind. And that being able to help them while at the same time being able to add another property to your portfolio might be a win for everybody. So in these times when things like this happen, everybody that I know that has been doing this for years and way older than me, they're like, this is the season for opportunity for everyone. And also, just so you know, we're entering into like the fall and winter season, the best time for people that know targeted areas that they're interested in to try and find as many properties as possible. A lot of sellers are getting seller's fatigue. If they had it listed in the summertime and nobody brought it, or maybe they might've had it listed and a couple of deals have fell through. So now they're more open to negotiate. They're more open also to be able to be a little bit more flexible on terms, you know? You know, and even financing options. So as we approach a particularly, potentially troublesome period, one of the things that you can do is get ready to be able to purchase more property, one, and help some people that might just be in a bind that need someone to help them by purchasing their property.
You are such a good coach.
I agree. And I think, you know, it's true. Kelly and I both have properties, and I, correct me if I'm wrong, Kelly, but I think you and I both would like to grow our portfolios. Mm-hmm. And it seems like there's two approaches to, you know, kind of the economic season that's coming. It's fear, or it's, okay, here's the opportunity. Like you said, get your pocketbooks ready. And I think the wisest kind of those who are older than us and those who have kind of been through the cycle more times have proven that, you know, it is cyclical and there's no reason to be afraid, but there is a reason to, you know, pay attention when there's opportunity. This is also reminding me of a conversation I had with a really good friend of mine yesterday. We both have properties that were hit by Hurricane Ian, and hers was hit really badly. And it's tough, but we started talking about, okay, how can we get the property to the condition where you can help someone with it? Or how can we make it so that this actually turns into an opportunity for you? Not in a greedy way or anything like that, but in a way to make it work and to serve other people and help other people while still, you know, paying the bills and, and paying the mortgage that needs to be paid. But it's like, okay, how soon can you get the property just back to being livable? Because then it could be a home for someone whose maybe whole house needs to be rebuilt. So there's always those solutions if you're in the right mindset. And it's so easy for us to escape that mindset.
Right.
But once you put on your business pants and, you know, get in that mode, it's like, okay, how do I make this work? So right. I think that's really wise advice that all of us need to remember. So
I think all of this starts out with the mindset. There's no way at 23 that I would have gotten started if I didn't have a mindset, an entrepreneurial mindset, a wealth mindset. There's no way that you can actually sustain this long in an industry unless you have an abundance mindset and you want to work with right. people, collaborate and see and create wins for not just yourself, but for other people as well. So mindset is important. And when I do coach people, that's one of the things that we start off with, the mindset, because that's going to be the thing that's going to continue yeah. to help you see wins.
It's your baseline, right? And I think it's like even staying in that mindset is a big deal. Like right when you're about to sign the closing papers and you're like, oh my gosh, this is how much money?
Right.
And this is like, you know, in those seasons of panic, you know, we have to kind of, you have to build that mindset baseline so that
yeah.
you feel like you're falling over a little bit. You can have that to rely on. So this actually leads perfectly into my final question for you, which is, if you were talking to 23-year-old RB, what advice would you give her? What would you want her to hear? Because it seems like she was already pretty great, but what would you want to make sure that she knows?
That anything is possible, and don't limit yourself at what you know. Be open to learning what others know and expanding your horizons. Because I think that once I got comfortable with the conversion, that was just like a one-trick pony. And once I got comfortable with long-term tenants, I was a one-trick pony with that too. And then when I heard about short-term rentals, mid-term rentals, that did something amazing. And honestly, was the best decision I could have ever made, especially during the pandemic when people were having issues with their tenants. It saved me. And I'm not saying even just in a financial sense, I'm saying even in an emotional sense, because there's a lot of stress that comes with having to manage non-payment. And, you know, so I would say to myself, get good at your craft, but be open to learning other areas sooner, because I learned it, but way later, just because I got good and I got comfortable. Never get comfortable. Always keep growing. Always look for new opportunities. And it is okay to not necessarily go forward with every opportunity, but at least understand, because a lot of the times you can take different strategies from other areas and other ways of doing business and incorporate it into your business to make for better business for you and for others. So move forward, I would tell myself, and go out there and don't put a ceiling on what you can do, because everything is possible.
Awesome. That's all the questions I have. Any more for you, from you, Katie?
No, this was so great. It was so nice to meet you and hear your story. I think so many listeners are going to find it valuable and inspirational, and we cannot thank you enough for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. This has been amazing. You guys are amazing. This is such great energy. Yeah.
Thank you. And we're just, you know, so glad that you found value in Furnish Finder, and everything you're doing is so great. And we just love to hear the stories of not only your personal growth, but giving back to the community and helping others. It's something that we hope everyone can have the chance to participate in at some point.
My wheels are spinning on fun titles yes. for this one. I already think I already think I nailed it in. So thank you
Love
so
it.
Much for being with us. Please like or subscribe if you're enjoying our show. And comments are only available on YouTube, really. I haven't found any other podcast platform that really allows for comments. So if you have a question for RB, or you want to hear about some other topic that we haven't talked about yet, then please go ahead and add it on one of the episodes on YouTube. All right. Have a good day, everybody.
Thank you.